Ray Kroc, the man who created the McDonald's chain of restaurants.
As a young man, I met two brothers called Richard and Maurice McDonald, who ran a small hamburger restaurant. I didn't know then that the result would be the chain of restaurants with the famous Golden Arches. I was born on the 5th of October, 1902, in Oak Park, which was near the city of Chicago, USA. My parents, Louis and Rose, were of Czech origin, and like all immigrants, they worked hard to establish a new life. Being born in America, I had different life expectations from my parents. But I was not afraid of hard work. Even at a young age, I wanted to work and make money. But it was a long time before I managed to achieve my aim. I went to school locally, but I preferred action to academic study. I left school as soon as I could, and then had to decide what job I was going to do. I could have been a professional piano player, as I had had lessons when I was younger. But I decided I could probably earn more by going into the world of business. In 1914, when I was 12 years old, the First World War started, and the USA sent soldiers to Europe to fight the Germans. 3 years later, I was still too young to fight in the military, but I lied about my age and joined the Red Cross. They were training ambulance drivers to help injured soldiers, and at my age, I saw it as an exciting opportunity. The war ended just as I was finishing my training, and I wasn't sent over to Europe. After the war ended, I did a variety of jobs, like selling lemonade and working in shops and restaurants. I learned a lot from them, but I realized that I had to find work that was more serious. In 1922, I married at the age of 20, and my wife, whose name was Ethel Fleming, wanted more financial security than my jobs provided. I found work with a company called Lily Cups that sold paper cups. I discovered that I was quite a good salesman. During the day, I sold cups, and in the evenings, I played the piano for a radio station. After a while, I left Lily Cups and started selling property in Florida. I found the work easy, and I was quite good at that, too. Aged 25, I returned to Chicago, and my wife and I started a family with the first of our four children. Now it was essential for me to have a steady job with a good income, and I was pleased when Lily Cups offered me a job again. The fast food restaurants of the time were the stalls that sold food on the streets. They were good customers, as they needed the paper cups I was selling. In 1929, Lily went into business with tulip cups, and I had a wider range of products to sell. New clients were appearing, such as drugstores and baseball parks. I loved the sport of baseball, and Wrigley Field in Chicago, the home of the Chicago Cubs, was one of my customers. I offered advice on how to increase the number of spectators coming to watch baseball games by suggesting they sold carry-out food as well as drinks on the stands. This would also increase my sales. But the manager wasn't interested in my ideas. One of my other clients, however, was interested. A drugstore called Walgreen Drugs tested my idea for a carry-out food service. They had already been selling to about 100 customers an hour, but I showed them how they could increase that using my products. Disposable cups and cartons cost more, but the income from using them was greater. Soon, all of their stores had carry-out food, and I became a top salesman. However, it was hard to make sales elsewhere. The stock market crash of 1929 had ruined many businesses and had led to the 1930s being years of serious economic depression. They were also the years of prohibition. In 1925, the production of alcohol was banned in the USA, which meant that people started spending money on soft drinks. This led to the development of dairy bars. These were places that sold soft drinks. One of my clients, Ralph Sullivan, reduced costs with a new product made from milk and ice cream called a milkshake. He was very successful. Realizing this was an opportunity for me to make some money, I took his idea to a man called Earl Prince. He owned ice cream parlors, a type of cafe that sold ice cream, and he agreed to try selling milkshakes. Milkshakes were so popular that Earl Prince needed more cups than he usually ordered. He became my best customer and bought 5 million cups a year. We talked about the plans that he had to further improve his business. He was a mechanical engineer and had developed a new machine which made milkshakes faster than someone could make them by hand. He called it a multi-mixer, and I thought it was a real innovation. I showed it to managers at Lily Tulip to see if they were interested in distributing it to their clients. To my complete amazement, they turned the idea down. It was an opportunity that I could not miss. But would I be able to run my own business successfully? It was 1939, and I was 37 years old. I decided to take a risk. Earl Prince agreed to give me the marketing rights to the multi-mixer. I set up a company to sell the multi-mixer, which I called Malt-A-Mixer Company. My clients were people who owned soda fountains, bars, and restaurants, and used the multi-mixer to make all kinds of drinks. We changed our name to Prince Castle Sales, and we were doing well. But then, in 1941, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and the USA entered the Second World War. We had to stop production of the multi-mixer because supplies of the metal we used to make it were no longer available. To make an income during the war, I worked with a man called Harry Burke. He had a product that gave ice cream a sweeter taste. Added to the frozen milk that was used to make milkshakes, it was a cheaper version of ice cream, and it helped our organization to survive the war years. After the war, we were able to sell the multi-mixer again. It was popular, and we sold 9,000 units a year. By the late 1940s, my income had risen to $25,000 a year, which was a great deal of money in those days. However, in the 1950s, we were faced with competition from other companies which reduced our own sales. In addition, the soda fountains, which bought two-thirds of the multi-mixers that were sold, were slowly becoming fewer in number. We looked for new products to sell, but could not find anything that we thought would be successful. The McDonald organization in San Bernardino, California, was one of my existing customers. In 1954, when they ordered their 8th multi-mixer, I decided to visit and see what they were doing with all those drink mixers. It was a long and expensive flight to California, but it changed my life, because what I found out surprised me. The McDonald brothers were not in the soft drink business. They were fast food operators selling hamburgers. They had bought the multi-mixers because so many of their customers wanted a milkshake with their meal. This made me think about my business strategy. Should I be trying to sell more products to the fast food operators? Or perhaps I should invest in an opportunity that was just opening up with the McDonald brothers. They had a small franchise operation with 8 branches, and the agent who managed the branches for them was leaving. With my sales skills, I could make the franchise larger and could make a great deal of money. The brothers agreed, but had several conditions. They limited the cost of buying into the franchise to $950, which I thought was a small amount of money. The percentage that I got from sales was 1.4, which was an even smaller amount. Looking back, it was not a good deal, and I was never going to make enough of a profit. However, at the time, I did not know that. I had also thought that I was going to make money by selling multimixers. Then I realized that most franchisees would only buy 2 mixers, and that each one usually lasted for 10 years before it needed to be replaced. I kept thinking, trying to find a business idea that would be successful. With a franchise operation, we had only considered expanding in California, in addition to the 8 branches the brothers had already franchised. I thought that we should consider expanding to include the whole country. After all, people ate a lot of hamburgers. The McDonald's agreed to the idea if I managed it, and on the 2nd of March, 1955, we formed McDonald's Systems Incorporated. In the same year, our first restaurant was opened in Des Plaines, Illinois. My approach to franchising was different to that of the brothers. The production of the hamburgers and the way they were served stayed the same, but I wanted to make other changes. I wanted to make it easier for the franchisees to succeed. I thought it was wrong to make them pay all of the franchise fee before they had even started. I also wanted to provide a marketing service and support them in other ways. It was my job to persuade people that buying a franchise was a good idea. I did so using my best-selling techniques. I went from town to town, giving speech after speech to the groups of people I had to convince. There were the people who were buying the new franchises, the people who were going to lend them the money to do so, and our suppliers. I was very grateful for my communication skills, because without them, I don't know if I would have succeeded. In my speeches, I focused on product, quality, and cleanliness. I said how important it was to make the restaurants family-friendly, and for the employees and owners to have a pleasant environment and good working conditions. People commented on how kind they thought I was being, and I told them that it was important that those involved knew I cared about them. We were all in the business together, and my view was that I would only succeed if they succeeded. Keeping everything going at times was very difficult, especially as I was not very well and suffered from several serious health problems. The McDonald brothers did not want us to open so many branches, and we often had disagreements. By 1961, I decided I didn't want to argue anymore, and I bought the brothers' shares in the company. I paid them $2.7 million. I also opened the Hamburger University. This was a training school. It still exists today. That was responsible for teaching McDonald's employees about service, quality, and cleanliness. Since it opened, more than 80,000 managers and owners have attended classes. That year was quite eventful, and it was also the year that my marriage ended. The 1960s were an important decade for me, both professionally and in my personal life. By 1963, I had opened our 500th restaurant in Toledo, Ohio, and I got married again to a woman called Jane Dobbins Green. In the next 2 years, we opened another 200 restaurants, and in 1965, McDonald's became the first fast food company to be listed on the stock exchange. The value of the shares started at $22 each and climbed quickly to $49. By the end of the 1960s, we had over 1,500 restaurants. Over the years, I realized that the real heart of the business were the buildings themselves that the restaurants were in, as they were a capital asset. We were in the property business, not just the food business. And that is where I really made my money. For the restaurants, I focused on providing clean eating places for people of all ages. Prices were low. You didn't need to make a reservation. And there was a fixed menu that did not change. The staff were trained to be polite, and customers learnt to trust our quick, friendly service. Young people could get a job, an income, and work experience. All of our working procedures were standardized to ensure efficiency, and we produced a 75-page manual for franchisees that explained everything in detail. In 1967, we opened McDonald's restaurants in Canada and Europe, and later also in South America and Asia. My business model worked in all those places, and we opened restaurants in 118 countries. The restaurants served well over 50 million customers every day, and McDonald's had become an international household word. It was not only one of the major brands, it was also one of the largest organizations in the world that actually owned the buildings that its branches were in. All this success proved difficult in my personal life. And in 1968, my second marriage ended. I was president, then chairman of the organization from 1955 to 1977. I then became senior chairman for my remaining years. In addition, I became the owner of the San Diego Padres baseball team. But that is a different story. And in 1969, I married a woman called Joan Mansfield. The McDonald's Corporation was more than business to me. It was a way of life and a chance to help others in need. We made large contributions to various charities. And then in 1974, we started the Ronald McDonald House. This was an organization that provided support for parents of children who were ill. People sometimes ask me how I had managed to become so successful. Life presented me with a big opportunity that I was fortunate enough to recognize when it appeared. My life ended in 1984 when I was 81 years old. Most people knew the name McDonald's, but few customers had heard of my name, Ray Kroc. I didn't mind, though, because for me, success was always a team effort.